Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And unfortunately today, we are marking the 1 year anniversary of the war in Ukraine. Russian troops started their invasion of Ukraine on the 24th of February, 2022. So we've now had over 365 days of this war. And let's not forget that it was reported that President Putin thought that this war would be over in a matter of days, in a very similar fashion to what happened in Crimea in 2014, when the Russian troops went in, were met with very little resistance, they held a referendum and annexed the area. So President Putin thought that that was going to happen with the four regions that he decided to invade in Ukraine. However, this time round, things were very different because Ukraine was ready to fight back and the West got behind Ukraine and provided a huge amount of support, both financially and from a military perspective. And unfortunately, the two countries are now locked in the biggest war that Europe has seen since World War II. So in today's video, to mark the 1 year anniversary of this war, what I want to do is have a look at the impact that it's had on the Russian economy. So we'll have a quick recap of the sanctions that have been applied against Russia. We'll then have a look at what's happened to Russia's two major sources of income from oil and gas. We'll have a look at what's happened to other trade. We'll look at what's gone on with the economy, what's happened to the Russian ruble, what's gone on with regards to the people who've left Russia. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what the overall impact has been on the Russian economy and what the impact of all of this has been on the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters so you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And as always, thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. I genuinely appreciate it. Prior to the invasion starting on the 24th of February last year, Russia had been building troops along the border of Ukraine, and countries around the world were watching these developments with interest. Now, at the time, President Putin said that he had no intention of invading Ukraine and that he was just building up his security forces. However, concerns were rising amongst the leaders of the West, and plans were put in place to take action against Russia if it did decide to push on with the invasion. And almost immediately after the invasion started, sanctions started to be imposed directly against Russia. The first round of sanctions that were imposed were focused on the financial system, and Russia was excluded immediately from the SWIFT payment system, which meant that it became very difficult for all Russian businesses to make and receive payments. And in addition to that ban, numerous Russian companies and individuals were specifically identified, which meant that it became impossible for them to make and receive payments with most countries from the West. And alongside these payment restrictions, financial institutions from the West were instructed to seize and freeze all Russian assets that were held in the Western banking system. And this amounted to around 300 billion of Russian assets that had been built up over the course of the last 10 years. Now, in addition to these financial restrictions, a number of countries, including the USA, Canada, and the UK, came out and stated that they no longer wanted to buy any Russian oil products. And these announcements were designed to try to reduce the amount of revenue that Russia was pulling in on a daily basis, because it was one of the biggest oil suppliers at that time. Now, most of the rest of Europe wanted to follow suit, and the leaders stated that their intention was to stop buying Russian oil. But the problem that a lot of countries had was that they were entirely dependent upon it. And so it wasn't possible to cut off all of those purchases overnight, because that would have caused an economic crisis in all of those countries. So what we had in the first 6 months of the war was a transition period where a lot of countries were trying desperately to find alternative suppliers for oil and gas so that they could stop buying from Russia and handing over large amounts of cash. Now, over the course of the last 12 months, we've seen 9 rounds of sanctions being applied against Russia. And these sanctions are all cumulative, so they build on top of one another. So the original sanctions identified companies and individuals. Since that time, more companies and more individuals have been added to that list, and more countries have cut their supply chains with Russia. However, on the 5th of December, an outright ban was introduced by the European Union, preventing all of its member states, and there's 27 countries in the European Union, from buying seaborne Russian oil. And in addition to that, an oil price cap was also introduced, which restricted the price that Russia was able to sell its oil to $60 per barrel. Now, out of all of the sanctions that were introduced over the last 12 months, these two have had the biggest single impact, because up until that point, a lot of European countries were still buying large volumes of Russian oil. And to follow up on those sanctions, on the 5th of February, a further ban was introduced on all refined oil products, so gasoline and diesel and those sorts of things. And a second price cap was also introduced for those products on the same date. So the financial sanctions that are currently in place are designed firstly to make it much more difficult for Russia to make and receive payments, and secondly to cut off a lot of its markets that it was previously selling large volumes of oil, gas and other commodity items into. And now that Europe has introduced all of these bans, it's now in a position to start enforcing secondary sanctions. And secondary sanctions are a situation whereby countries who are still dealing with Russia, such as China and India, will be asked to reduce their trading relationship with Russia. Otherwise, they may threaten some of their other trading relationships with the West. So I think the overall summary of the sanctions from Russia's perspective is that firstly, it's made trade much more difficult because they can't use all of the traditional payment methods. Secondly, the number of markets that are open to Russia have reduced dramatically. And thirdly, trade is now proving to be much more difficult from a logistical point of view because a lot of the deliveries are much further away from Russia. And thirdly, they're now having to look for multiple replacement markets. Now, before we go on any further today, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Atlas VPN. And to let you know about their amazing 3-year deal, whereby you can get full coverage for only $1.83 per month, including an additional 3 months extra and a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee. If you use the internet without any form of protection, you leave yourself exposed to tracking, hacking, and advertising. Using Atlas VPN protects you from all of these. Atlas VPN provides you with comprehensive security and is used by more than 6 million people worldwide. So it's fantastic news that it will protect you from hacking and tracking and data breaches. But what's also great news is that it can save you money and open up a whole new world of entertainment because it allows you to change your location, which gives you the opportunity to get better deals and to access content that may not be available in your region. Atlas VPN is available to use on unlimited devices for one subscription. And Atlas VPN is currently offering an amazing 3-year deal whereby you can get full coverage for only $1.83 per month, including an additional 3 months extra and a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee. So to purchase this exclusive Joe Bloggs offer, please click in the description below. Oil is the single most important commodity from Russia's perspective, and historically it's accounted for almost 50% of all of Russian revenue. Now, prior to the invasion of Ukraine, the European Union was the biggest single market that Russia was selling into, and it provided oil directly to a lot of countries through a network of pipelines that it had built over the last 30 years. But as a direct result of the invasion of Ukraine, the volume of oil being purchased by European countries fell, and Russia had to find alternative markets. But in order to persuade countries such as China and India to increase the volume of oil it was purchasing from Russia, Russia had to start offering large discounts in the market. And this chart plots the price difference of Russian oil against Brent crude oil over the course of the last 12 months. So you can see that this time last year, Russian oil was trading at a discount of around $5 per barrel compared with Brent crude. However, as a direct result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the fact that many countries in the world did not want to buy Russian oil, it then had to start offering large discounts. And by the middle of April, the discount that Russia was offering to buyers for its oil was up to around $37 per barrel. And the level of discount being offered remained at those high levels all the way through to the middle of August, when OPEC announced that it was going to cut the amount of oil that it was producing in order to keep the price of oil high. And at that stage, the discount that Russia was offering fell to around $23. However, at that point, the price of oil had also fallen in the market. And this chart shows the actual price that Russian oil has traded for over the last 12 months. And you can see that this time last year, a barrel of Russian oil was trading for around $95. It increased to a peak of around $110 at the start of March, which was directly linked to the increase in market prices at that time. However, by mid-April, the price of a barrel of Russian oil had fallen to around $70 per barrel. The price then rose over the next couple of months to hit a peak of around $100 per barrel. However, since that time, we have seen a gradual reduction in the market price for Russian oil. to the current level of around $53 per barrel. And the current price is really interesting because the price cap that's been applied against Russian oil has been set at $60 per barrel. However, Russia have refused to agree to this price cap. They've said that they will not provide any oil to any country that signs up to the cap. But this seems a little bit counterintuitive because if they were operating at the cap level, they would be able to sell their oil at $60 because the market price of oil currently is around $85, so significantly above $60. However, the actual price that Russia's selling its oil for is more than 10% below the market cap. And this analysis highlights the huge impact that sanctions have had on both Russian oil revenues and the Russian economy. And if we look at this chart, it shows the daily revenue that Russia has been earning from crude oil sales over the course of the last 12 months. And the colour coding here shows the different countries that it's selling to. The red section at the bottom is China. The light blue section is the European Union. The brown section is India. The grey section is a variety of other countries. The turquoise section is Turkey. The purple section at the top is the United Arab Emirates. And the sales to the dark red section are not known. And this chart highlights a couple of interesting issues. The first one is that this time last year, the majority of sales that Russia were achieving for crude oil were going to the European Union, as shown by the large light blue section. However, if you look at the situation today, you can see that there are no sales to the European Union. So Russia has had to change its supply chain network entirely. And as I mentioned earlier, historically, a lot of the sales that were being made to the European Union were through pipelines, which is a really low-cost, efficient way of delivering oil. So this time last year, around 60% of all of Russia's oil was being fed into these pipelines. The situation today is that the vast majority of those pipelines are now redundant, and Russia is now having to transport all of these replacement sales via the sea, which is firstly much more expensive than the pipeline delivery method, and secondly, it involves a lot more logistics in terms of organising all of the shipping, the loading of the vessels, the unloading of the vessels, the insurance. So Russia is now having to get involved in much more complicated logistics than it was this time last year. But in addition to all of that, this chart shows something really interesting. If you look at the total amount of revenue that Russia's earning, this time last year, it was around 220 million euros per day. And if you look at where the revenue is today, it's roughly at a similar level, around 220 million euros. So you may think that that's had absolutely no impact on Russia and proves that the sanctions aren't working. However, if you jump back to this chart, which shows the price of Russian oil this time last year and the price of Russian oil today, you can see that there's a marked difference. This time last year, Russia was selling a barrel of oil for around $95. Today, it's around $53. So if we jump back to this chart, which shows that this time last year, Russia was earning around 220 million euros of revenue per day from its oil sales. So at a price of around $95, that equates to about 2.3 million barrels of oil per day. If we now look at the situation today, the revenue is roughly the same, 220 million euros. However, the price of those barrels of oil has fallen to $53. So that equates to around 4.1 million barrels per day, which means that Russia is now exporting an additional 1.8 million barrels of oil per day, an increase of almost 80% compared to this time last year for the same amount of revenue. So what that tells us is that firstly, there's been a huge reduction in the profit margin from Russia's perspective because they're having to sell almost double the amount of oil to earn the same amount of revenue. And also from a logistical side of things, it's going to be much more difficult because firstly, they've had to stop selling through the pipelines. So they're having to put all of this oil onto ships. And of course, there's going to be a lot more cost involved in that, particularly because the volume of oil is almost double. So once again, this highlights the problems that Russia is now encountering as a direct result of the sanctions that have been applied against it because of the war in Ukraine. Historically, Russia's second largest source of income was the sale of natural gas. And as with the oil, it piped a lot of this gas directly to European countries. And over the last 30 years, many of those countries switched away from the old-fashioned way of producing electricity using coal towards natural gas because it was seen as being cleaner and better for the environment. So we had a system whereby a lot of countries had become very dependent on this supply of Russian gas. Now, as I mentioned at the start of the video, after the invasion started, many countries came out and said, we don't want to buy Russian products, but we don't really have a choice because we're entirely dependent upon them. What they didn't want to do is cause a major crisis in their own country by cutting off the purchases and leaving them short on electricity and supplies. And the gas that was being piped directly in from Russia was difficult to replace because the alternative supply system is to use liquefied natural gas, whereby the gas is converted into a liquid under pressure and transported over the sea. But the problem that you've got with regards to using liquefied natural gas is that you have to have a regasification facility to convert the liquid back into a gas, which you can then feed into your pipelines and use in your power stations and people's homes and used by industry. So what we've seen over the last 12 months is a rapid transition away from using Russian gas to using liquefied natural gas. And a lot of countries have set up floating facilities whereby you have a huge tanker that can take the delivery of the LNG, convert it, and then feed it into your network. And this chart shows Russia's volume of exports of natural gas for 2021 and 2022. The light blue bars on this chart represent the volume exports in 2021, and the dark blue bars represent the volume exports for 2022. And the volumes shown here are cumulative, so each month adds on to the previous month. So that's why we've got a nice smooth transition in terms of the shape of the chart. But what you can see clearly here is that the volume of gas that Russia has sold in 2022 is significantly lower than what it sold in 2021. And if we look at the charts for December, which gives us the full year outturn, you can see that the total amount of gas supplied in 2021 was around 185 billion cubic meters, compared with around 100 billion cubic meters in 2022. So that represents a reduction of almost 50%. However, the situation is actually much worse than that because, as I just mentioned, a lot of countries were in transition during 2022. So they had to keep buying all that Russian gas through the course of the year until they got to a position where their storage facilities were full and also they had alternative ways of providing their own LNG. So 2022 actually represents a year where a lot of European countries were still buying from Russia. However, going forward, there will be much lower purchases. So if we were to plot the sales for 2023, on this chart, it's likely that they will be significantly lower than the figures for 2022. So once again here, we're seeing a huge impact that the sanctions have had on Russia's revenues. And one of the major challenges that Russia is facing is that in order to sell this gas to other countries, they're going to have to liquefy it and move it over the sea. And the problem with that is that they don't have enough liquefied natural gas facilities to be able to do that. And historically, they've been relying upon partners such as BP, Shell, ExxonMobil to help them with both the design and the payment of those new facilities. But as a direct result of the invasion of Ukraine, all of those countries cut their ties with Russia and stated that they no longer wanted to have anything to do with them. So they've lost both the technical expertise and also the access to capital to be able to pay for those facilities. So Russia is going to have to invest huge amounts over the course of the next 5 to 10 years to be able to set up all of those LNG facilities to try to regain some of these lost sales. The sanctions that have been applied against Russia are wide-ranging. They don't just apply to oil and gas. And following the invasion, many companies came out and stated that they no longer wanted to deal with Russia. And this included a variety of multinational companies that had set up facilities and joint ventures within Russia. So over the course of the last 12 months, what we've seen is all of these companies exiting from those facilities. Many of them have been purchased by Russian companies or nationalized by the Russian state. However, those companies that remain within Russia no longer have access to the supply chain network. And that's obviously a major problem for industries such as the automotive trade, which has a truly global supply chain. And if you can't get all of the parts, that means that you can't complete the car and therefore you can't make any sales. So Russia's been struggling in terms of its own industry, but it's also struggling because all of the countries from the West have stopped all of their exports into Russia and they've also stopped buying things directly from Russia. And over the course of the last 12 months, this has had a huge impact on the level of trade that Russia has been able to undertake. This chart shows the value of Russia's exports to the 34 largest markets in the world over the course of the last 3 years. And those 34 largest markets are the European Union, which is 27 different countries, China, the USA, South Korea, Japan, India, the UK, and Turkey. And in terms of the colour coding here, the blue line at the top represents total exports. The red line represents the export of mineral fuels, so that's basically oil and gas. And the orange line at the bottom is all other goods. So as we've just covered off oil and gas in some detail, I'm going to only focus on the orange line at the bottom here. In January 2022, the value of Russia's exports of other goods was $17.5 billion. However, as you can see, in 2022, there has been a consistent fall in the monthly amount of those exports. And by December 2022, the total value was down to $10.1 billion, which represents a fall of around 43%. If we now look at the same data for Russia's imports, you can see that in December 21, the total value of Russian imports was $20.3 billion. Now, immediately following the invasion, that figure crashed to a level of $8 billion. However, during the remainder of 2022, Russia increased the amount it was importing from countries such as China and India. And by December, the figure had increased to $15.6 billion, which still represents a fall of around 23% compared with the figure from December 21. So once again here, you can see the huge impact that the sanctions have had on the Russian economy, both from the export of goods and also the import of goods. The variety and volume of goods that's available to Russian consumers is now much lower than it was this time last year. Now, the overall impact of the sanctions and the reductions in oil and gas and other revenue that Russia has experienced over the last 12 months has had a devastating impact on the Russian economy. And Russia announced a deficit of $48 billion for the full year of 2022, which was the worst in its history if you exclude the COVID pandemic era, which was just an anomaly. And that full year outturn represented a fall in GDP of 2.1% in the year, which compared to the original forecasts for 2022 of between 3 and 4% growth in GDP. So this was a massive swing. And Russia was officially declared to be in recession during the second half of 2022. However, the situation is not getting any better. And in January 2023, Russia announced a deficit in the month of $25 billion. And this is the worst single month performance in Russia's history. Now, in terms of analysing the ongoing impact of the sanctions on the Russian economy, there are a number of different forecasts that have been put out by different bodies. And this chart shows the forecast movement in GDP put together by five different research agencies. The top one is the International Monetary Fund. The second one is the official estimate from the Russian economy. The third is a consensus of Russian economists. The fourth is the World Bank. And the fifth has been put together by the Bank of Russia. So if we start with the IMF, they are the only research agency that are predicting the Russian economy to grow in 2023. And as you can see, they're predicting 0.3% growth, so a minimal amount of growth. And this was published in January 23, so is very recent. However, it was published before the figures for January 23 were released by the Russian authorities, showing the $25 billion deficit in the month, which, as I mentioned, is the worst in Russia's history. And in order to achieve this forecast growth of 0.3%, Russia's going to have to see a significant turnaround in the later part of 2023. The official estimate for 23 provided by Russian authorities is a fall in GDP of 0.8%. However, this was put together in September of 2022. And a recent consensus from Russian economists that was put together in February of 2023 is estimating that GDP in the Russian economy will fall by 1.5% for the full year of 23. The World Bank is less optimistic than these Russian economists and is forecasting a fall of 3.3%. And that was put together in January of 23. And the Bank of Russia is the most pessimistic and is saying that the Russian economy could fall by up to 4% during the course of this year. So once again, what we're seeing here is the devastating impact that these sanctions are having, because prior to the invasion starting, Russia was forecasting year-on-year growth in 2022 and 2023 of around 3 or 4%. However, 2021 saw a fall of 2.1%. And then from that lower base position, all of the research agencies, apart from the IMF, are forecasting the Russian economy to contract further in 2023. Now, as part of this analysis today, I wanted to include the ruble, because there's always a lot of comments whenever I post a video on Russia about how well the Russian ruble is doing and how it proves that the Russian economy is completely unaffected by any of the sanctions. So I thought we'd have a look at what's been happening with the price of the ruble. This chart shows the movement in the Russian ruble over the course of the last 5 years. And the reason that I wanted to include this is that the movements in the value of the ruble actually started prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So if we look at the situation on the 31st of December 2021, one US dollar was trading at that time for around 75 Russian rubles. Now, immediately following the invasion of Ukraine, the value of the Russian ruble fell significantly, partly as a result of the financial sanctions that had been applied against Russia, and partly because a lot of countries no longer wanted to trade with Russia, and therefore there was a huge fall in the demand for the ruble. And by the start of March, one US dollar was trading for around 130 Russian rubles. However, as you can see from this chart, over the course of the next few months, the value of the ruble increased. And by the end of June, one US dollar was trading for around 50 Russian rubles. And if you look back over the last 5 years, you can see that that was actually the strongest position that the Russian ruble had ever been in. So the logical conclusion at that time was that Russia was actually doing very well and the strength of the ruble represented how well the economy was performing. However, whenever you're dealing with currency, you need to look at the size of the market. And because most countries in the world were no longer dealing in Russian rubles, nobody actually wanted to buy anything from Russia, therefore they didn't need to buy Russian rubles, the market size had reduced dramatically. And that meant that it was much easier for the Bank of Russia to be able to manage that price and move it to a position where it was favourable from Russia's perspective. However, if we now look at what's happened to the price over the course of the last 6 months or so, you can see that the value has started to deteriorate. And one US dollar today is now trading for around 75 Russian rubles. So it's back to the price that it was at in December 21 before the war started. So there's not been a significant increase or decrease in the value. However, the market for the Russian ruble is significantly smaller today because most countries in the world are not dealing with Russia and therefore don't need to buy any Russian rubles. And so the demand has fallen. So it's much easier for the Russian authorities to manage this position. And obviously, as it stands right now, the Russian authorities can't see any reason for strengthening the value of the ruble. Access to technology is another major implication of the sanctions that have been applied against Russia. The interconnected world that we've developed over the course of the last 50 years relies upon experts in various fields. And in technology, we've got expertise all across the world. We've got little hubs that are producing really amazing pieces of tech, whether it be artificial intelligence or wafer-thin semiconductors or the latest robotics, whatever it might be, it's happening in little pockets all around the world. And unfortunately, from Russia's perspective, Russia is not an expert in terms of technology. It relies upon other countries to develop that advanced technology and then it wants to utilize the benefits of it. And unfortunately, from Russia's perspective, the sanctions are preventing them from being able to access any of that technology. And what we've seen over the course of the last 6 months is that countries such as the USA are now increasing their focus on this technology and they're preventing countries such as China from being able to access some of the best and latest technology because they don't want China firstly to copy that technology or secondly to start supplying it through the back door to Russia to enable Russia to benefit from it. And there are a number of reasons why this is important from Russia's perspective. Firstly, with regards to its oil and gas industry, a lot of its facilities are in inhospitable places. They operate in really cold climates. And those facilities rely upon the latest cutting-edge technology. Now, most of that technology was brought over by the business partners that Russia teamed up with, companies such as Shell, BP, ExxonMobil. And all of those companies have now exited from their relationships with Russia. So Russia can't rely upon those companies to keep supplying that tech. And one of the problems that Russia's now facing is that if it has production problems and that technology starts to go wrong, firstly, they don't have access to the software to be able to upgrade everything. And secondly, they don't have access to the kit to be able to replace any parts that are faulty. So this could have major implications with regards to the production of oil and gas in the country. But in addition to maintenance issues, Russia no longer has access to the latest cutting-edge technology. So that means that the economy will not be able to grow at the same rate as other economies around the world who do have access. And immediately following the invasion, the Russian Central Bank came out and stated that there was a risk that Russia could go back 10 years in terms of its technological development as a result of not having access to all of the technology that's being produced by the West. Now, not everybody in Russia was supportive of the invasion of Ukraine. And immediately following the start of the war, we saw a huge brain drain. It was reported that around 500,000 people left Russia at the start of the war. And these were the best people. These were people who were either working for foreign companies who decided that as those companies were leaving, they wanted to go with them, or they were at the cutting edge of research and development, and they knew that there was no longer going to be access to all of that cutting edge development going forward, or they were educated people who in principle decided that they didn't want to support Russia in its war against Ukraine. And the bottom line impact for Russia was that these 500,000 people were the most educated, the most skilled, and the most mobile. So Russia was losing some of its best people at the same time that it was losing its trading relations. So this was a double whammy from Russia's perspective. But the situation actually got worse in the summer when President Putin announced that he was mobilizing an additional 300,000 men to go and fight in Ukraine. And the net result of that announcement was that 700,000 people made a break for the border. And Russia saw a second wave of brain drain. So over the course of the last 12 months, Russia has lost over 1.2 million people, and the majority of these people are highly skilled, highly educated, and highly valuable to the Russian economy. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video really to mark the occasion of 1 year of war. It's not something to celebrate. It's actually quite depressing. A lot of people have lost their lives. There's no official register of how many people have died, but it's estimated that up to 100,000 Ukrainians and up to 200,000 Russians have either died or been seriously injured over the course of the last year of fighting. And clearly that's an absolute tragedy that could have been avoided. But the purpose of today's video is really to dig down into the economic impact of this war on the Russian economy. And as we've seen from all of the data that we've looked at, this has had a devastating impact on the Russian economy. The oil revenues have fallen, the gas revenues have fallen, other trade revenue has fallen, access to imports and goods has fallen from Russia's perspective, access to technology is down, the number of highly skilled and educated people in Russia has reduced because of the brain drain. And the value of the ruble is exactly the same today as it was before this war started. So there's been absolutely no benefit from a currency perspective. So overall, when you look at the impact of the sanctions, they have all been entirely negative from Russia's perspective. And that's why Russia experienced a fall in GDP of 2.1% in 2022, compared with the estimated growth of around 4%. So that's a 6% swing. And in 2023, the majority of the forecasts are that Russia is going to see another fall. So on a cumulative basis, this is getting worse from Russia's perspective. And it's been estimated that it could take around 10 years for Russia to get back to the position that it should have been at the end of 2022. So obviously from an economic perspective, the impact on Russia's economy has been disastrous. But unfortunately, it's also had a major impact on the global economy. The global economy was forecast to grow at a very healthy rate in 2022 and 2023. However, all of those forecasts have been downgraded as a result of the fact that most countries have had to change their supply chains. So the countries of Europe have been most affected. They've had to change all of their oil and gas purchases and various other commodities. But that's had a knock-on impact to the rest of the world, because as they've gone into the market and had to buy things like LNG and oil from other countries, that's forced prices up, that's put pressure on some of the other nations, it's taken away some of their supply chains and meant that they've then had to change where they're buying from. So the knock-on impact of this has been huge. And as we've discussed on the channel, we've seen inflation rise dramatically over the course of 2022. The knock-on impact of that was that many central banks increased interest rates. That put pressure on anybody that's got debt and reduced spending, which led to a reduction in GDP, which has led to a general reduction in GDP globally. So unfortunately, whilst the sanctions have had the desired effect on the Russian economy, the side effect for everybody else is that there's been damage dealt to the global economy. And of course, the 1 year anniversary doesn't actually mark the end of this war. All it tells us is that we're now in year two of this conflict. And the speech that President Putin gave recently in Moscow indicates that this war could go on for a very long period of time. Russia is fully committed. It's not going to pull out, and it's going to throw more and more resources at this war. And unfortunately, Russia does have a lot of reserves. So although we've got a deficit from a GDP perspective, Russia is funding that using its reserves, and it's likely that those reserves will last for at least the rest of 2023. So unfortunately, it's looking highly likely that this war is going to have a negative impact on both the Russian economy and the global economy for at least the next 12 months. So if you've enjoyed watching today's video, please give me a thumbs up, and thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end.